Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Rain. Rain, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, Leticia. Thank you so much for having me. And hi, everyone. So my name is Rain. I'm a soul and life alignment mentor and coach. And I specialize in emotional intelligence, self-love mastery, here the feminine and masculine energy, and just subconscious reprogramming and retraining your brain. So I help my clients from anything from eczema and clinical depression, anger management, to array of things, you know, so it's really, really amazing. But my clients, mostly, they're either the ones that have it all, like they have the husband, they have the wife, they have the house, the car, the money, the career, but they just feel like something's still missing. And then the second type of person that I help is the one that wants it all, and they just don't know where to start, or they don't know what's going on, that they're just not moving forward, and they're doing the things and they're taking the steps, but they're not really moving forward. So what both of these people have in common is they are seeking success externally rather than internally. So that's why I'm a soul and life alignment mentoring coach. We create success from the inside out. So we work internally, and our internal success creates our outer external success.
I love it. So, Rain, how would you describe survival mode?
Ooh, survival mode. Survival mode is usually something that doesn't really feel good. And in all duality, sometimes it can even feel safe. But in actuality, it doesn't feel safe. It's when our nervous system is not in homeostasis, but it's on tilt. So it could be yourself sabotaging yourself. It could be living on autopilot. It can take all kinds of forms. But that's a kind of survival mode, yeah, in a nutshell.
I love your definition, and I do agree. It's when we're in that fight and flight continuously, and not in homeostasis, as you say it. So, why don't you tell us your story to and through survival mode?
Okay, so it starts when I was younger. Actually, after my parents divorced, and I actually really grew up from that moment of time everywhere and nowhere. I moved around a lot in the Netherlands, but also a lot in New Zealand. And abuse was rather the norm than the exception, which there shouldn't be any abuse at all. And that was my normal. That's what I thought was normal because you got hit because they loved you. And it was just the way someone loved you. But that isn't really true. So after my parents divorced, I saw my mom bang her head against the wall. I started being raised very extreme, where, if I said yes instead of yes, mom, or yes, dad, or whatever, in this case, mom, then I would get like dishwashing soap down my throat or being hit like with a leather belt, but like with the metal bit. Or like I just remember a time that like with a wooden spoon, the table was hit. And it wasn't even that hard, but the spoon broke. It's like, what? But like I know I lived in survival mode because everything was in autopilot. I could literally sit outside and time would just pass me by. I had no sense of time. And time would just pass me by. So I noticed a lot of things, like whatever I said, it was never right. If I would tell the person what they wanted to hear, it wasn't good. If I told them the truth, it wasn't good. Like anything, like there was nothing going right. It was always about this person. And later, I actually found out that this person was very narcissistic. And I also know the difference now between, someone with narcissistic character, heuristics, and someone that's truly narcissistic, so some people can just have little narcissistic characteristics. Like it's always about them, or sometimes they just project or whatever, but they don't have the whole list of wanting control and manipulating, neglecting you emotionally and mentally, or just like you always have to walk on eggshells and all no integrity, like a whole list of them. That's when you know, hey, someone's very narcissistic. And then you have a covert narcissist, which is kind of hidden because they're so great with other people and people absolutely love them. But just then within that energy dynamic with just you and them, like that hidden dynamic, like what they say, like between four walls, they're a different person. But it could also be in a whole family dynamic, where they're still great with other people, but they're just not so great with you. And they're very narcissistic towards you. So I don't really like labels. And I think in my environment or in my culture, we feel like, and not to discriminate, but we feel like labeling is a very white person thing to do. And even with like ADHD, they're like, oh, the child just needs to lose its energy, go outside and play. And so we don't really have those labels. But once I read deeper into it, and I read a book, which I didn't really agree with the book, but it did make me identify, oh, wow, I really did grow up with a narcissistic parent. And then when I was curious, like, hey, did anyone else grow up with a narcissistic parent? I had like over 500 comments in this Facebook group, a woman saying, yes, me, this is my experience and this and this and this and this. And there were so many people bonding because they went through the same thing. And I used to just say like, oh, I just grow up in a household, abuse rather the norm than the exception, and abuse in every way you could think of, whether mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, energetically, like in all the ways, like anything could be used against me, even a relationship with a cousin, or I don't know, a pen or a book, or like anything I had could be used against me. And it wasn't a safe environment for me to grow up in. So what my subconscious did is it kind of blocked my memories for my own safety so I could survive. So that's living on autopilot. And if you've been through this, you know exactly what I mean with living on autopilot. And for those that have not been through this, it's just like you're living, but it's like a zombie. It's kind of living, but it's not living at all. And you can maybe feel things, but you kind of really don't. So when I grew up, I remember a time in New Zealand, and I was sitting on the floor, back against the wall, knees up. And all I wanted to do, I used to listen to this song from Mariah Carey, and maybe you already know which one. It's called Hero. And later on, I actually learned that she didn't actually want to do the song, but she learned to love the song as she understood how many lives it touched and how many lives it had changed with her song. But I used to listen to that song, and if I would kind of see if I could cry, because if I cried, I knew I was alive. Because if I couldn't feel any emotion, I was dead. And that was so deep and so profound that I actually had to check myself. Am I still alive? Can I cry? It like that would be a sign of life because it's something coming out of me. So that was very significant. And then I actually learned that my default emotion, so that's the emotion you always come back to, used to be crying and sadness. Why? Because it would n let me know I'm alive. And it's very logical in a sense as well, because the first things babies usually do when they come out the womb is cry. And that for the doctors is also a sign of life. And when I found that out, I obviously wanted to change my default emotion. And I think later on we'll go deeper into that as well. But that's kind of my story. And only later, when I got to live independently, I was 17. Oh my gosh, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait. Like, she put me out the door and stuff, and it was my word against her because she would literally throw my suitcase, like a little suitcase, like a tiny one, outside and throw me outside. And that was because I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness, very strict. And in my culture, we are raised pretty strict as well, which I don't mind. I was also partially raised by my grandparents. I just didn't really want to go to one of their religious meetings. And I always went. And I really embodied, I wasn't forced, like, I really loved it. But just this one time, I just wasn't feeling it. So I was like, I can't go because anything I do, I want to do with heart. And that was just banging on the doors, kicking on the doors, and yelling. And I kind of locked myself in the bedroom. And once I kind of had to get out, all my stuff was on the outside. And I just went outside. I think I might have texted an SMS at the time or called like a friend, like, yeah, I'm outside. I don't know where I'm going to go. And then I stayed at a friend's, and that's kind of how it, but I loved it because, oh my gosh, Leticia, that just meant that everything right in my life is because of me. And everything wrong in my life is because of me too. So it was that, I don't know if you could call it like radical accountability and self-responsibility that I just absolutely love. No one could take credit for everything gone right in my life, but I could not even blame anyone that if anything would go wrong, because it was all my doing, it was my life, and I loved it. And that was kind of my path to freedom, and things slowly coming out, which is really, really, really beautiful.
I love that you mentioned the radical acceptance. I call it radical responsibility or ownership, right? Like, I think a huge part of being able to exit survival mode is just that, being able to take that ownership, right? Like, I ended up in jail. And while I will say with certainty that my actions didn't necessarily end me, there was somebody else's actions. I had to take ownership for the decisions that I made that landed me in the wrong place at the wrong time. And oftentimes we suffer in life because we're looking to pass the blame. I had a guest in season one say that the biggest addiction for everyone until they know better is blame. And I agree with that because it's almost like we're conditioned to pass the buck to someone else. But when we start taking radical ownership, that's when things shift because it's taking our lives out of someone else's hands, taking our lives and making it less of someone else's responsibility. Even though, parents do owe us a level of responsibility by bringing us into this world, I think once we get to a certain age, we can no longer pass the buck. Yes, the things that we experience in childhood have a tremendous impact in adulthood, in the rest of our lives. But until we take ownership, we are giving our power away.
Yeah, beautiful. It's kind of like forgiveness, right? It's accepting that it happened, not accepting that it was right, but it's forgiveness is actually people think like, oh, I'm just capturing them. And no, I remember my best friend's kids were here and they accidentally broke something off my daughter. And my daughter was sulking upstairs. And then we were just downstairs after a while, watching Brother Bear. And then I went upstairs, I paused it before it kind of got too much into it just after a few minutes. I said, you can choose not to forgive, but while you choose not to forgive, that person might not even know what you're dealing with. And we're just downstairs having fun dancing in the rain. And so sometimes we feel like we keep someone else captive, but the only one we're imprisoning is ourselves. So forgiveness is releasing the control and the enslavement to that person and to that experience. It's just accepting that that experience has taken place, that it has happened, not that it was right, that it has taken place. And you take back the control over your own life, over your own emotions, over your own thought process. And you can choose to feel differently. And you can choose to reframe your thoughts
Absolutely.
about it. Yeah.
Reframing, I think, is it's such an important step in the healing process. So whenever I discuss accident survival mode on this podcast or with my clients, I say that there are three phases. The first one is self-awareness. You can't change what you can't see. The second one is reprogramming, is spending that time to rewrite your narratives, right? And then the third is a reinvention. You cannot thrive with the same identity that you used to survive. And so
Yeah.
it's this sense of almost like a rebirth beyond your trauma, beyond the circumstances that landed you in survival mode in the first place. Now, I want to go back to your story and really just touch on the point of how detrimental narcissistic parenting really is. I have coined my father as a narcissist, and I'm not necessarily sure, but I think the way that he framed parenting really revolved around him and only him and his needs, his experiences. He told me at 7 years old that the reason for my parents' divorce was my birth. The real reason for my parents' divorce was the fact that he cheated on my mother, but a man who cannot take ownership of his own created a lot of confusion in my life. And there was never any ownership of that. Even 30 years later, when things really got to a head and I was able to articulate how impactful, how what a negative impact his actions had on my life, and he just dismissed me. And I, you know, it was difficult. It took me years to recover from that relationship that I had with my father. And had I not recovered from it, I think it would have spoke to every other relationship that I had in my life. I've also sat on the sidelines in relationships and watched narcissistic mothers and the impact it has on their children. And I've seen incidents where most of the children are caught up in chaos in some way, whether or not they're addicts or caught up in chaos in other ways. It has a detrimental effect. And I've had conversations on this podcast about around parenting and how important it is for us to heal ourselves as we parent our children, because as you may or may not know, trauma can be passed on for 8 generations. So it then comes to that, back to that radical ownership, radical acceptance of our healing, so that we can move forward without dragging all of the baggage with us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I loved what you said about also, having that self-awareness and then processing through it. I think for me, there's still a step in between, and that's once you're self-aware, it's so important. Like emotions, they're just like people. They just want to be heard and seen and felt and acknowledged. And then actually nearly automatically, it just releases itself. But just like people, emotions express themselves in different ways. Sometimes just sitting together in a park is enough. Sometimes it's, hey, you good? Yeah. And it's just, and sometimes you need to tell your whole story, and emotion is the same way. It just wants to be heard, seen, felt, and acknowledged. And that's so beautiful. When you know that and you do those things,
I think the hardest thing about that, though, is in society across the board, we are conditioned not to deal with our emotions. And we are conditioned to not deal with our emotions to keep those around us comfortable. It's never about us, it's always about someone else. So you can't get angry because it makes somebody else uncomfortable. You can't get sad because it makes somebody else uncomfortable. And then the result of that is a whole generation of people who don't know how to process emotion, or they hold on to those default emotions. I know for me, my default emotion was anger. I was the angriest person I knew. But that was me hiding the pain that I had, the unbelievable pain of the emotional neglect that I experienced as a child. And because my emotions weren't openly accepted, because it made other people feel uncomfortable, I learned to stuff. And I stuffed and I stuffed and I stuffed. So all of my hurt and my pain and all of those emotions became anger, because I just didn't know anything else. I didn't know how to process anything else other than that anger. And I think it's really important, especially when we're dealing with children, to give them the opportunity to process their emotions, because it's a humanistic experience that is being stripped of us, especially boys, especially boys. And then that creates bigger problems later on, because we have all of these grown adults that have no idea how to process emotions. And it's not something we teach. It's not something that anyone is out here teaching children how to do. And if anyone has listened to this podcast for an extended period of time, I talk about I homeschool my kids. The first lesson I taught them was emotions. I didn't teach them ABCs. I didn't teach them 1, 2, 3s. I taught them how to express their emotions and what they meant. So my 1.5-year-old would very quickly tell you how frustrated she was. And for some people, that may be uncomfortable. But now she's almost 6 and still can articulate the emotions that are on the forefront of her day. And I think that's so healthy, even if it makes other people uncomfortable.
Yeah, definitely. That's I also wanted to homeschool my kid, but here you aren't allowed to homeschool, unfortunately. Where I grew up in New Zealand, it was more than normal too. But like teaching our kids things that are very important, and like you said, to release those things. I do feel like before you even have kids as well, and before your kids have kids, it's important that they know these things so they can really process and release these things that you spoke about, that they've received from generations. And it can go beyond like 80 or 30 generations. I've had clients where we do emotional energetic. I'm so sorry,
That's
Louis.
okay.
So I've had clients where we've had emotional energetic release sessions or even belief systems that they've had that went on for so many generations. Even recently, I had a client and it went over 30 generations back. And I always compare it with you don't see it very clearly. I have like this beauty mark here. And like my daughter doesn't have it. I have it. My biological mom has it. Her mom does not have it, but her mom does have it. So we all carry the coding in our DNA because DNA is a cell, is atom, is energy particle. Kind of when you walk into a room, you know without having seen anything that they were sneakily trying to steal something, they were making love, or they were arguing because you feel the energy in the room. You don't have to have seen something. So energy is a cell, is an atom, is an energy particle. It's a code, right? DNA is a code that gets passed through. Just like diabetes runs in the family, or asthma, or whatever it is, or like red hair, or blonde hair, black hair. The same goes with emotional energetics, mental energetics. It gets passed through. It's just a code. And it's releasing that code. And to release that code, we come back to hearing, seeing, feeling, acknowledging that belief system, that emotion, that energy. So it feels seen and it feels free to let go in however way it wants to feel acknowledged or seen or felt. That's what we need to give it. We all express ourselves in different ways. One likes to cook, one likes to draw, the one likes to dance and scream. And we all express ourselves differently, and so do emotions. Your anger may look very different to someone else's anger. Someone just might want to scream it out, and someone might self-harm. But finding healthy ways to express that, and it's so important because when we clear our things, it's important to clear that is, but also those that have been, so that we can clear things that will be in the future. And when we clear that path, the children we have and the grandbabies and grandbabies, we've released those codes. And that is so beautiful, such beautiful work.
And that's why they say when you heal yourself, you heal generations, because your healing too is passed on. We talk about breaking generational curses or cycles or whatever you want to call them. That is what healing is, being able to tap into those codes that are going wrong and course correcting, so those who come behind you have a better standing in life. What would be some suggestions for how to properly process emotion?
Yeah, so that is a really great question, Leticia. So we go really back to becoming aware. So I've had a time that something randomly, it's not random, but randomly popped up on my feed. And it was about the, excuse me if I don't say it right, is it the Menendez or Hernandez brothers? That were
Menendez.
such Menendez brothers that were sexually abused. And I knew something was there. So what I did, I watched the whole, like every live recording there was to purposely trigger myself. I closed the door, I let my daughter know, like, I just need time for myself. And I just cocooned up like a baby. And I just let everything pass through. But you need to know how to do that. But it's just letting the emotions flow through whatever is going on or happening. And I have the luxury that my daughter is very independent. She doesn't need me, but she desires me in her life. So she is very independent, and I could just move through everything that's going and I could let the emotions pass through. I always tell my clients, because often people think that financial investment is the biggest investment they make. It's not. When you work with me, emotional investment is the largest investment you make. Why? Because once you're there, you need to sit with it. You need to be able to move through and just, as like a third party, let it be. And that could be really difficult. Some people just want to shut down. Some people want to process and just rush through it. What do you do when all these things come back up that you, like you said, you might have pushed down or you put somewhere in a treasure and you locked it and you threw the key away and you put it somewhere in the ocean and you thought it would never be found? What happens when that comes up? That is the biggest investment you make, the biggest one. So, just to make it easier, I always say, like I've mentioned over and over again, is just to hear, see, feel, and acknowledge that emotion and just treat it like a person. It's like, okay, anger. Okay, I need to hear you. I need to see you. I need to feel you. I need to acknowledge you. And sometimes, if we're friends, Leticia, it's just enough to say, I feel so disappointed in you. And it's enough. And sometimes I'm so disappointed in you because blah, 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 and the whole story needs to come out. And then it's done. But to make sure the emotion fully gets heard, seen, felt, and acknowledged fully, when that happens, it releases itself. And this, like I said, expression can come in many forms. Sometimes it's just naming the way you feel. I feel disappointed in myself. Okay, what are we gonna do about it? And it kind of just releases itself. Sometimes maybe you need to journal about it. There might be writers listening. They need to journal about it. Some people need to go boxing, just need to get their frustration out. There is no one answer. But the main thing is just feel it, see it, acknowledge it, and let it be, and it will release itself. If you do not know how to do it yourself, go to someone that is experienced in this because it can happen in a moment. And I always say healing doesn't need to take years or months or weeks or days or hours, it can happen in an instant. But you need to work with someone that's very experienced in that. Because I've had a client, and I don't resonate with this, but I think a lot of women do. She felt shame and guilt of being a woman, but she was born a woman, you know? So it's like, okay, I don't need to understand, but I helped her release it. And afterwards, she could just be authentically herself. She would wear things that she would usually not wear. She would just be herself, be more feminine in the way she sit, more laid back. The way she crossed her legs was different. The way she dressed and the way she just carried herself was so much different. And it happened in an instant. The same client wanted to be more authentically herself, so we released some things. And so I work with the subconscious. So basically, that means like you should see that kind of as an avatar or in the network of like even mushrooms have them as well. They have that network, you know. So your subconscious is kind of like that. And no, it's all knowing. The thing is, when you connect with your subconscious, it will know things that you might have forgotten. Like, I've forgotten a lot of things from my youth. My recollection is not always something I can count on regarding a lot of things. When I have a great memory, I know everything is going great in my life. My subconscious does have all the answers. So I usually connect with the subconscious mind. And I ask them either with an emotional energetic release session where we work on emotions or the mind and we work with belief systems. And I ask the subconscious yes or no questions. And you would need to train yourself in that. And then we find the emotions that are supporting, that are causing the eczema or the depression or anger issues, the anger management issues. And then we release them. And if it doesn't want to be released, I ask them, is this person ready to release it? Sometimes they're not, because maybe it's still serving them. Because I know someone that's depressed. They wouldn't say they're depressed, but they're literally taking meds for it. So they're clinically depressed. But it has a pro because that's the way of getting attention from family. It's special care. And that means you are special and people care. So, you know. Everything. So that might be a reason why it's not releasing. It could also be that your subconscious, after you've released so much, say you've done it for 30 minutes or 3 hours, that it's like my body needs to catch up with the energetics as well. It could also be that there is something else blocking it and you find that block. So that could be different reasons. It could be one of the questions I ask is, do we need to know more about this emotion before releasing it? Often the answer is yes. Then I'll just ask, does anything come up for you? If it's no, we can ask more close questions. If it's yes, I just let them speak. And them speaking
Just releases.
acknowledges, yeah, it acknowledges. The emotion is heard, seen, and felt, and acknowledged. The same with belief systems. I had created a modality, Belief Alchemy. The same thing is, so it could be procrastination, it could be self-sabotage, it could be insecurity, it could be self-confidence. What belief systems can we release regarding self-confidence, regarding stubbornness, or whatever it may be? Pridefulness, and we identify them. Then we ask if we can release them.
I
Usually
think,
they can be released. Yeah.
yes, the process of releasing is so powerful. And like as you were saying, that the subconscious play, I almost with the questions, right? Like our brain cannot resist the question. So a lot of our healing, which is why I think coaching is so powerful, right? It taps into the subconscious because the subconscious is going to find that answer, even if it doesn't have it right away. Rain, I really have enjoyed this conversation. So tell us how we can connect with you online.
Oh wow. So I usually people connect with me th usually through WhatsApp. I don't know, maybe I can give like my email or my WhatsApp to you and people connect with me there. I think regarding this, I do, if I may, I have a gift.
Yes.
Yeah, so I have actually a free complimentary masterclass, Growing Up with the Narcissistic Parents. There is no sales or upsell or whatever after that. It's basically creating more awareness about it and It also really helps when someone has gone through what you've gone through, and that is also kind of like an acknowledgement, like, see, I wasn't crazy. I had the same thing. So I have that as a gift for your listeners. And I also have this journal, which is not out yet. So this is the first time I'm publicizing this, but it's not out yet. Maybe there can be a pre-sale or whatever, but it's actually made for men. But I noticed that a lot of women that grew up in, for them, unsafe environments, whether it's emotionally or mentally or physically or whatever, they really resonate with it. And not just resonate with it, the men I've read the introduction to, and the gift is the introduction, is they're speechless. They're like, I feel like you've known me my whole life, or like since I'm born, like you know my inner dialogue, the way I feel, like everything, like how is this possible? And the fact that I'm even a woman, it's like, how? And they're speechless and they come to tears just by the introduction that itself. So this is something that you can also really sign up for. Like I said, I haven't created, it's not in physical form yet. I got the feedback. Please make it also in audio form because your soft, feminine voice, so nurturing, nourishing when I read it, is so great for their mind, body, spirit, and their soul and their energy. So that's something I'd like to give. Just the introduction, like I said, it's not out there yet, but it's very, very, very soon. And I know that this will definitely help you in move forward.
Okay. Well, I will make sure that those details are in the show notes for the audience. But Rain, thank you so much for your time on Survival Mode Disrupted. And audience, I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Letitia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose, because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth: you're not broken, you're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it, don't numb it, move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.